This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the minisode,
where this week we are going to catch you up with everything that's been happening while we were gone.
Yeah, exactly. We couldn't do our little minisode once a month where we told you the crimes that caught our eye during that month.
Yeah.
And a bunch of big shit happened while we were on our little break.
Yeah.
And so we're just gonna give you a little catch up on all like the big things that happened.
Yeah. 2020 is not quitting in all aspects, and that includes the true crime world.
That is very true.
So yeah, we're just gonna get right into all of the stuff you may have not caught in the media?
Yeah.
If you live under a rock? Question mark?
Just and obviously kidding. There's a ton more, and we're not going super in depth. This is just kind of like to get you and us caught up.
Yeah, kind of like rapid fire crime catch up.
Yes.
There we go. Rapid fire.
I love it. It's our new segment.
There we go. To start off, we just wanted to touch on the Breonna Taylor case, because that has been an ongoing case since March, and there haven't really been any updates in it other than like protests and such.
Yes.
So, very quick background. Breonna Taylor was shot and killed in March by Louisville police officers during a raid on the incorrect apartment, and all spring and summer, companies have done campaigns in her name and laws have been suggested in her name, but still, no one was charged for her death.
No justice, yeah. No peace, motherfucker.
Just talking about her. And recently, a grand jury indicted Brett Hankinson with wanton endangerment charges, but again, was not charged for causing Mrs. Taylor's death. And he was, he got these wanton endangerment charges because he fired into the sliding glass patio door and windows of the apartment, both of which were covered with blinds. And this is in violation of a policy that they have in their department that requires officers to have a direct line of sight, which he did not have.
Yes, because he was just shooting into fucking nothing.
Yeah, just shooting into some closed windows, basically. And he is the only one of the other three officers, or there's three in total. He is the only one of the three who has been dismissed from his job. He was dismissed with a termination letter stating that he showed an extreme indifference to the value of human life, which is true, I would say, of
definitely
all of them.
But, you know, yeah, he's the only one who was let go and fired.
Yeah, and I would like to point out, I'm not going to put words in Sarah's mouth. I would like to point out that, again, he was charged with endangerment, not charged with bodily harm or anything, even close to actually Breonna Taylor. Her name's not mentioned at all in his charges. And this obviously caused civil unrest and resulted in more protests erupting across the U.S. Breonna's family was paid a $12 million settlement by Louisville officials to settle a wrongful death suit brought forward by her mother, which I think is interesting because how did you settle in a wrongful death suit if no one's getting charged for a wrongful death? You know
right?
what I mean?
And it's like, obviously the town or city didn't want to go through with this, which is why they paid so much to settle, because they know they would have fucking lost.
Yeah. And it's very upsetting. And Louisville has since then banned the use of no-knock warrants, which is good, but kind of feels like something that should have been in place before. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sure.
I've seen so many arguments that are like, well, if we didn't have no-knock warrants, people would escape. We wouldn't have caught terrorists, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it's like, well, also innocent people wouldn't be dead, so.
Yeah, that's the thing, because a lot of people, try and use the argument that, he shot back. And it's like, yeah, if an intruder broke into your home and you had your license for a gun, you would also shoot back. And everything
exactly.
he did was legally within his rights to protect his own home. So,
exactly.
Yeah, just a quick update on that case. It's a really sad update. It's not the update we wanted, but nonetheless, we have to share the news.
Exactly. And so the next case that we wanted to give you an update on was Vanessa Guillen, which is a case that we covered in episode 60. And just a little refresher, she was a 20-year-old in the Army and stationed at Fort Hood in Texas, who was killed in April by 20-year-old soldier Aaron Robinson. And his girlfriend confessed, saying that Aaron had beat her inside of an armory on base, and she helped him get rid of the body.
Yeah.
And the man who killed her killed himself while being detained. Since the episode, his girlfriend, Cicely Aguilar, was arrested and given the charge of conspiracy to hide and destroy evidence. On July 14th, a federal judge in Texas denied bond for her after she pleaded not guilty to this charge. And her trial is scheduled to begin on today, the day we record this, the 28th. Army Forces Command dispatched a small team in late July to Fort Hood to review the fort's sexual harassment and assault prevention program. And they gave a survey to 225 soldiers from 12 different battalions. And the results showed that roughly 90% of the soldiers have a high trust in their leadership, and approximately 86% hold a high willingness to report incidents to SHARP offices if they arise. And so this review concluded that their sexual harassment and assault prevention program overall meets Army standards.
Yeah. I mean,
Army standards are low.
That also, like, that feels like that's not an accurate representation of the survey. Like, I would be like, I would like to know if the survey was anonymous.
That is true.
Like, what were the pretenses of this survey? Because if it wasn't 100% anonymous, then I don't think that those results mean anything, because I don't think 96% of people would be willing to go to their commanding officer to tell them they had been sexually assaulted.
The only things that I could like really find for background on that was that they only did 225 people, and there's thousands of people that live on Fort Hood, and they did not survey Vanessa's own battalion.
Okay.
Because it had happened right after, and they thought that it would give some sort of conflict of interest.
Okay.
So Vanessa's family also met with President Trump on July 30th, and the family pleaded for help in the investigation, as they believe that there's just this big cover-up going on, and also for a change to be made for other victims of sexual assault in the military. And during this meeting, Trump sympathized with the family and told them that they have sent the FBI and Department of Justice to Fort Hood to investigate, and then he offered to pay for Vanessa's funeral. The I Am Vanessa Guillen bill was presented to Capitol Hill on September 16th, and if passed, this bill would allow active duty members to file sexual harassment and assault claims to a third party instead of their direct superior, which makes the total amount of sense.
Yeah.
And this bill would also make sexual harassment a crime within the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and the House still has to vote in order to pass the bill.
Yeah. I personally think that that is a great idea.
It is.
Because there's just a lot of reasons why one might not want to go to their commanding officer, just like you might not want to go to your direct manager at work or something. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
There's a number of reasons why you shouldn't have to do that. So I think that's wonderful. Let's hope that it passes. Also, I meant to write more about it, but I didn't. Look into Fort Hood, because there's been like 26 bodies found on the fucking site of Fort Hood this year alone.
Oh yeah. Fort Hood is cray cray.
It's something's going on over there, allegedly. Okay, so the next case we want to cover is the case of Alyssa Turney. And we have not covered this case on our show yet, but we would love to eventually, because it's a very interesting case.
Yes.
So very brief background. On May 17th, 2001, Alyssa Turney went missing and was initially suspected to have run away due to a note that was left behind. And it was like a suspicious note in general. But since then, her younger sister, Sarah Turney, has been searching for answers. Sarah was adamant that Alyssa's stepfather, Michael, knew about something about the disappearance and has been advocating since then. She literally made a website for her sister a week after she went missing the first time.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like, immediately was online trying to do stuff. So Sarah has been doing all of this advocating, and the case was gaining traction, like, in social media, but it still was considered a cold case. So she started her own podcast called Voices for Justice, in which she discussed this case, and I believe she also discusses other cases as well that are, like, not well known or cold.
Yeah, and I know, like, a ton of different podcasts that she's appeared on to, like, discuss her sister's case.
Yeah, she is, like, always advocating for her sister. And when she started doing this podcast, she actually requested the records on her sister's case and got about 3,000 pages of information. And she learned a lot from this, and she said that she learned a lot of stuff that she did not previously know about the case, and it helped a lot. So, the fun thing happens now. During quarantine, like most of us, Sarah Turney got bored, and she got a TikTok to pass the time. And this is where she gained the most traction for her sister's case. By the end of April alone, she had over 10 million likes on her videos, which aren't even just views. Those are someone interacting with the post.
Yeah, that is insane.
Yeah. And her TikTok would include her sharing information on her sister's case, but would also show videos of her sister and stepfather interacting. And I actually followed her TikTok on this because, like, I followed her account. Because I had seen some of the videos before, but I hadn't seen all of them, and they're very uncomfy to watch, but it's cool that she put them out there to, like, get the word out, basically. So, Michael Turney is the father and the stepfather of Alyssa, and he had previously been looked at by the police, but not, like, super looked at. In 2008, though, he was arrested after police found 26 pipe bombs in his home, a manifesto, and hours of audio and video recordings of him stalking Alyssa right up until she went missing.
Why? It's unnecessary.
Disconcerting, to say the least. Yeah. But still, nothing was done. He went to prison. He went to prison in 2010 for 10 years for the pipe bombs, and that's it. Nothing to do with Alyssa's death. On August 19th, August 19th of 2020, a grand jury indicted him on one count of second-degree murder for the death of Alyssa. He was arrested the next day, and the police department is currently declining to reveal what prompted, like, this arrest and all of that stuff. Sarah expressed her thanks quickly after this information was revealed on Twitter and TikTok, saying, "Thank you for being my family and thank you for caring about Alyssa as much as I do. This process has been absolute hell. I never wanted to get on media. I never wanted to make my own podcast, but we did it, you guys." And that's just a really, like, that's a nice ending, I think, to that story.
It really is. When I saw
the video.
Well, no, I didn't see the video, but when I, like, read on the news that it happened, it was, like, 20 minutes after it posted.
Yeah.
I, like, ran inside and told my fiance about it. He's like, "I don't know what that is." And I was like, "Let me give you a rundown of the whole case in 5 minutes and tell you why you should be so excited that he was arrested."
I, like, randomly went on TikTok and she, like, had posted a video of them, like, announcing it. And then it was her, like, covering her face or something like that, and I was like, I didn't know I'd be crying in the club right now, but here we are. Just kidding. There are no clubs to be seen here.
So, on to the next thing, which is Scott Peterson in the Lacey and Scott Peterson case. So, again, a little background. Scott and Lacey Peterson were married, and Lacey was 7.5 months pregnant with a son named Connor. And she went missing on Christmas Eve of 2002. Scott became a prime suspect when the police learned that he was having an affair and that he had told this woman that his wife was missing on December 9th, which was weeks before she actually went missing. Then in April of the next year, the body of a fetus was found washed on the shore of San Francisco Bay and had still had the umbilical cord attached, but it also had nylon tape wrapped around its neck.
Yeah, it was a horrible case.
Mm-hmm. And the body was determined to be Connor's, and Lacey's body was found the next day, and it was really just her torso, and the fetus had been cut out of her, but since the body was so decomposed, they were unable to determine if this happened before or after death. And Scott was arrested after Lacey's hairs were found on his fishing pliers and was charged with a crime and sentenced to death in 2004. Now back up to this year. On June 2nd, the California Supreme Court heard the defense in Scott Peterson's newest appeal. The defense argued that some jurors were improperly excused when they said that they opposed the death penalty, but were not asked if they could put their views aside for the case. They were just taken away. Mm. They also said that the trial was unfair because they asked to have it moved to another county after the jurors filled out a questionnaire where half of the jurors said that in their minds, Scott was already guilty. So on August 24th, in a 7-0 vote, the California Supreme Court upheld Scott's conviction, but reversed his death sentence on the terms that the jurors were dismissed improperly. And one of the justices explained that in Supreme Court rulings, jurors may not be excused merely for opposition of the death penalty, but only for views rendering them unable to fairly consider imposing that penalty in accordance with their oath. And this is the meaning of the guarantee of an impartial jury. So I don't know if he's going to have another sentencing trial yet or if he's just going to be stuck with life in prison. Mm-hmm. But also California hasn't executed anyone since 2006.
Yeah.
So it was very likely that it probably wasn't going to happen anyways. But I feel like it's kind of an injustice to the family because he kind of obviously did it.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to die in prison regardless. So yeah. I think there at least is some type of justice served that he's in prison. So on to the next one, where we are going to discuss someone being captured off of the FBI's 10 most wanted list. So we are going to be talking about Yaser Abdel Sayed today. He was born in Egypt and came to America on a student visa in 1983. He married Patricia Owens in 1987 when he was 30 and she was 15. They had a son in 1988, Islam, and two daughters, Amina in 1989 and Sarah in 1990. And Yaser was a taxi driver. Patricia said that Yaser was abusive to her, and when his daughters were growing up, the girls told their family and friends that he was physically and sexually abusing them. Sarah wrote in a text to a friend, "He treats me like a whore." Amina would regularly show up to school with bruises and a split lip and was raped at least once by her father. He would also show up to her work, videotaping her, and would punish her if she smiled too much at customers.
So another father videotaping their kid for literally no reason.
Yeah, like, don't let your kid work if you're just going to go out and fucking videotape them the whole time. Yeah, like, that's weird.
It's weird.
Amina started dating a boy who quit school to save money to actually help her flee from her father. He said that Amina said that her father would regularly threaten to kill her, and he meant it. On January 1st, 2008, Yaser took Amina and Sarah to his taxi, kissed them, and told them he was taking them out to eat. He drove them to Irving, Texas, where he shot both girls to death in his taxi cab. And Amina died instantly, but Sarah survived long enough to call 911 screaming, "Help, my dad shot me, I'm dying, I'm dying." Yaser went on the run and in December 2014 was put on the FBI's top 10 most wanted list. And on August 17th, 2020, police began surveillance on a home in Justin, Texas, which was purchased by Yazer's brother's daughter. Police saw Yazer's brother, Yazin, and his son, Islam, exit the house, but there was still a shadow of a man inside the house. On August 26th, SWAT units invaded the home and captured Yazer Syed, now age 63. Later that day, they also arrested his son and brother from concealing a person for arrest. And Yazer was on the run for 12 years, which is a very long time.
It is. Like, that's a crazy amount of time to evade the FBI.
Yeah. I think I did not know the story based on his name, but I think I've heard that story before of him, like, driving his daughters out and, like, shooting them.
I know Crime Junkie has covered it.
Okay.
I don't know what other ones have.
Yeah, that's probably where I heard it.
So, the next update we want to give you is on the Lori Vallow case. And if you don't remember, we briefly covered it in Minisode 24. And this is where Lori's children, Tylee and JJ, went missing in September of 2019, and the remains of their bodies were found on Lori's husband's, Chad Daybell's, property in June of 2020. Vallow is charged with resisting arrest, contempt of court, solicitation of a crime, as well as two felony counts of conspiracy to destroy, alter, or conceal evidence. And on September 10th, she pleaded not guilty to all of these charges.
Nice. Of course she did.
Right. Her husband, Chad Daybell, is charged with two felony counts of conspiracy to commit destruction, alteration, or concealment of evidence, and two felony counts of actually destroying, altering, or concealing evidence. And he also pled not guilty in August. Chad's trial is set for January of next year and Lori's for April of next year. But the prosecution's actually currently trying to have them tried together instead of separately because they think they'd have a better case.
Yeah.
But Chad's defense is currently working on getting his charges just thrown out.
Nice.
And I'm like, the kids were found literally on your property.
Yeah. Like, sorry, guy, you don't get to get out of this.
Exactly. And they're like, this whole case is crazy, but
yeah,
we just are going to update you as it goes along.
Yeah. We're going to eventually cover the whole thing, but like not until we know more because there's so much we still don't know. And it's already such a crazy freaking story.
It is.
You, like, literally need one of those boards with, like, the red pieces of yarn so you can just tie all of them back to Lori Vallow. Because, it's true. Like, she's the head of it all.
Oh, 100%. You know, her, like, four husbands and their brothers and all their deaths and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone around her gets get. All right. So, an update on another case we brought to you in a previous minisode on Minisode 17 would be the Evelyn Boswell case. To refresh your memory, Evelyn Boswell was a 15-month-old girl who was last seen by her grandparents in December of 2019. After they had not seen her for a few months, they filed a missing person report in February of 2020. Evelyn's mother, Megan, claimed that the baby was with her father, who was in the army stationed in Louisiana, but this was not true. He didn't even know the child was missing. Evelyn's remains were found in March of this year in a shed belonging to her grandfather. In August of 2020, a Sullivan County grand jury indicted Megan with 19 counts against her. She is charged with two counts of felony murder, one count of aggravated child neglect, one count of tampering with evidence, 12 counts of false reporting, one count of abuse of a corpse, one count of failure to report a death under suspicious or unusual circumstances, and she had also previously been indicted on multiple counts of false reporting. On August 28th, she pled not guilty to these counts, and her next court date is set for December 3rd, which, like, come on, baby Casey Anthony. Exactly. We all know that you're guilty.
I know. And, like, one of her false reporting crimes.
Yeah.
Was she was supposed to take a lie detector test about this case. And she's like, I can't, I'm pregnant. And then like,
yeah.
And they're like, no, you're not.
Yeah. She just lies constantly.
So the next case that something big happened while we were out was the Tamla Horsford case. And basically, if you know anything about true crime lately, you've heard of this case. Tamla was a 40-year-old mother of five at the time of her death in 2018 in Cumming, Georgia, which is a predominantly white city with a strong history of racism. On November 3rd, 2018, she attended an adult sleepover party for a friend's birthday, and she was the only black person or person of color at the party.
Yes.
Her body was discovered lying face down on the ground the next morning, and a call to 911 was placed. But the caller, Jose Barrera, didn't check her breathing during the call or try CPR. He just touched her, said she was cold and dead. He also indicated during the call that she had been drinking, had a cut on her wrist, and may have just jumped off the second balcony to her death.
Yeah, already was claiming it might be suicide in the first call to the police.
Mm-hmm. So after the first autopsy came up as an accidental death, the family ordered a second one, which found severe injuries to her head, neck, and torso, cuts all over her body, and a laceration to the right ventricle of her heart.
Yeah, which someone can do during suicide, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Right?
And she also had traces of THC and a Plazolam, which is an anti-anxiety drug, which she wasn't prescribed. And she also had a blood alcohol content of 0.238, which is 3 times the legal limit and basically at alcohol poisoning amount.
Yeah.
And where her family and many others believed that she was murdered, in February of 2019, her case was officially closed as an accidental death. But coming in this year, in the wake of the George Floyd protests and the Black Lives Matter movement, Tamla's case has regained major interest in 2020, including the case being featured on many podcasts, and her name was posted on many signs during protests. A Change.com petition calling for the case to be reopened amassed more than 586,000 signatures, as well as rappers T.I. and 50 Cent shared posts about the case asking for a second investigation. On June 12, 2020, the county sheriff sent a letter requesting that the case be reopened and investigated by the Georgia Bureau of Investigations. He stated that the investigation was best undertaken by an independent law enforcement agency. So the GBI agreed to reopen the case on June 18th of this year, but did not specify when the investigation would begin. But, like, at least this is a step in the right direction. The case is now being reopened and justice may happen if she was murdered.
Yeah, I think at the very least, there is something happened to her at that party, whether it was an accident or it was a murder. You know what I mean?
But there has to be answers.
Yeah, the family deserves to know if it was an accident, then it was an accident. Like, not even an accident that she, like, killed herself. Like, someone accidentally killed her, you know? Yeah. But to hide it and everything makes it seem like a murder. So, you know. Not great. All right, y'all. So, let's get into the update on Madeline McCann, which is not one we would think was getting an update.
Right?
But here we are. So, quick overview, Madeline McCann was a 3-year-old girl from the UK who was on vacation with her family and family friends in Portugal in May of 2007, and she was just a few days shy of her 4th birthday. On May 3rd, 2007, Madeline's parents, Kate and Jerry, left Madeline and her 2-year-old twin siblings in the ground floor apartment they were staying in. The children had gone to sleep, and Kate and Jerry went to eat with friends at a restaurant just 180 feet away, just slightly larger than the size of, like, a football field. And they left for dinner at 8:30 p.m. And the parents said that they walked back regularly to check on the children while they were dining, but Kate discovered that Madeline was missing at 10 p.m. The Portuguese police believe that she had died in the apartment in an accident and that her parents had covered it up, officially making Kate and Jerry prime suspects. And when the case was closed in 2008 by the Portugal police by lack of evidence, they were no longer considered to be official suspects. In 2011, the Scotland Yard opened its own inquiry, treating the missing girl as a planned abduction or a burglary gone wrong. The operation was scaled back in 2015, but a few detectives remained on the case. In April 2017, they announced that they had received some tips and they were described as significant. In June of 2020, the police in Braunschweig, Germany, stated that there was a new suspect in Madeline's disappearance. A man went to the police when his friend was boasting in a bar that he knew what happened to Madeline while watching the 10-year anniversary special. This suspect is Christian Bruckner, and he is a 43-year-old German man who was living in a van in Portugal when Madeline went missing. Christian is a convicted sex offender and pedophile who was known to commit burglaries in hotels and deal drugs. In 2017, he was serving a jail term for dealing drugs, and in 2019, he was sentenced to 7 years in jail for raping a 72-year-old American woman in the same resort in Portugal in 2005, which is awful. Mm-hmm. Like, I just... Stop it, people. He was also investigated over the disappearance of a 5-year-old girl in 2015 and has 17 previous convictions for theft, forgery, drug dealing, firearms, rape, and sexual abuse of children. He had been arrested for exposing himself to children, and in 2016, he was jailed after police found USB sticks buried underground underneath the body of his dead dog that contained indecent images of children. In July, police went to a property in Germany where Christian once lived and started digging. The police say they have evidence to link him to the crime, but not enough to convict him. By digging up this property, they were hoping to find crucial evidence to get a conviction, such as photos or other keepsakes. The German police say they believe that Madeline is dead and Christian is being investigated for murder, where the Scotland Yard are still treating her case as a missing persons case. Her parents say that they will not believe that she is dead until a body is found. Yeah, that case is super sad, but at least we're like getting somewhere with it.
Yeah, like, after so many years, 13 years, there's finally something comes up. So the last case we're going to give you a little update on is the Golden State Killer case. And we did give you a little bit of an update right before we left. And he had just pled guilty to all counts of murder.
Yeah.
And basically, before... he was sentenced during the sentencing trial, he had to sit through and listen to victim impact statements. And you can go online and hear these. There's a lot of really powerful ones. A lot of women are angry and upset, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
And before being sentenced, he actually gave an apology of his own, saying, "I listened to all of your statements, each one of them, and I'm truly sorry for everyone I've hurt." He was then sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. However, during the trial, D'Angelo appeared to be weak and frail and having to be pushed around in a wheelchair. And then this video was released from his jail cell, which Morgan told me to watch, and I watched all of it.
And it's very creepy, right?
It is.
It's fucking bizarre.
And so this video shows him like standing up and walking around perfectly fine, not having to be in a wheelchair, moving around very quickly. And also just getting on top of counters and beds, just like climbing on top of things very quickly in a creepy ass manner. And it's like, you're not frail. You're just trying to do that to get sympathy.
Yeah. Which is why I just don't accept his apology.
Right?
Like, it's not even my apology to accept. I'm not one of his victims, but I'm like, that's a shit apology, my guy. So sorry. But yeah, he's a real piece of trash and continued to prove to be one,
right?
But yeah, like we said before, there are a million and one other cases that also happened while we were out.
Yeah.
But these are the ones that we wanted to cover and some ones that we had on our noggin. So we hope that you guys enjoyed this little catch up.
So if you did, you can follow us on Twitter at Crime Binge or on Instagram or Facebook at Crime Binge Podcast.
Yeah.
And remember to check out our new website, which is crimebinge.com. And when you check out crimebinge.com, make sure to submit your own listener stories so we can then do a listener tale episode and also hear about how cool you guys are.
Yeah, we would love to hear all of those stories. And if you liked this episode, make sure you go online and leave us a 5-star review wherever you are able to leave one. All right.
All right.
And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.